Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Tet Zayin Amud Bet with the Mishnah. The Mishnah is continuing from the first Mishnah in the Perek. The first Mishnah in the Perek began with the Shlosha Asar Shofarot, or 13 Shofarot, which is going to lead us into the aspect of Shkalim, because two of those Shofarot dealt with the Shkalim. While we're on the topic of 13, the Mishnah enumerated a number of items that are also 13. One of those items was that there were 13 Mishtachavayot. There were 13 times that they bowed down inside of the Mikdash, or around the Mikdash. And now this Mishnah comes to clarify what exactly are those 13 Hishtachavayot Keneged. So here, the Mishnah begins, Heichana yu Hishtachavayot Eilu. Where were these times that they bow down? Arba b'tzafon, v'arba d'darom, four in the north, four in the south, shalosh b'mizrach, three in the east, ubet b'marav, and two in the west. Keneged, shlosha asar she'arim. Keneged, the 13 gates or entrances to the Azara. So the proposal here of this Tana, and the Gemara will discuss this because there are other opinions with regards to this, is that the 13 times that they bowed down were Keneged, the 13 gates that opened into the Azara. So if you pass one of those gates, you bow down out of respect for those entrances to the Azara. Now the Mishnah is going to enumerate those gates. Dromim, the southern gates, Smuchim the Marav, starting from the western side. First one is Shar HaElyon, the upper gate. The upper gate is because of the grade of Har HaBayit. So the grade of Har HaBayit is that the western side of the Mikdash, or Har HaBayit, is highest, and then it moves down as you move towards the eastern side. So Shar HaElyon would be the upper gate because it's the furthest west on the southern side. Shar HaDelek, the second one from the west on the southern side, is the Shar HaDelek, which is the fuel gate, because that's where they brought in the wood for the Mizbeach. Shar HaBechorot, after that was the Shar HaBechorot. The reason for that is because Bechor is one of the Kodshim Kalim that does not require to be done in the north side. So therefore you could do it in the south. So they brought in the Bechorot from the south side. Shar HaMayim, the fourth one is the Shar HaMayim. So we're now already towards the eastern side of the Azara. That gateway is the Shar HaMayim. V'lama nigra shmo Shar HaMayim. What's the reason it's called Shar HaMayim? Shebo machnisim solchit shel nisuch HaMayim b'chag. Because that's where they brought in the nisuch HaMayim on the chag. When they went to draw the water to bring it in for the nisuch HaMayim the chag, in that Simchat Beit HaShoeva, they used to enter through Shar HaMayim.
For other reasons,
they did, but these are the main purposes. Right, I wouldn't say this is the only thing they did there, but this is the main reason. So they got their name was associated with the most significant event or the most frequent usage that's there. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Bo amayim mifachim atidim liyot yotzim mitachat. From there, the water, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Bo amayim mifachim atidim liyot yotzim mitachat miftan abayit. So there is where the water will come out in the future, outside from underneath the threshold of the house, you know, the foundations of the Mikdash. And it'll be mifachim, which we'll see in the Gemara. We'll define mifachim is that it's a stream like pouring out of a small pitcher. So that's the water that's coming out from there. The Gemara will discuss this. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is important because both the Babylon and Yerushalmi believe that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov was the Stam Tana who wrote Midot. He had a first-hand account of what happened in the Mikdash. He was alive during the Bayit. And his account in Masechet Midot is based on his what he saw in the Mikdash. So Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is speaking over here. Eliezer Yaakov was significant because of that, and we'll see that as we get to the Gemara. So then the Gemara says, Lu'umatan, opposite them, on the northern side, B'tzafon, Smuchim b'marav, starting again from the west. The first one is Shar Yechonia. Shar Yechonia, because Yechonia Melech, Yoyachin, left. When Nebuchadnezzar put him into Galut and deposed him, he went to the Mikdash to bow down. And he exited from that gateway out to his galut in Bavel. Shar HaKorban. The next one was Shar HaKorban, the area where they brought in the Karbanot. This is on the northern side. So all Kodshei Kodoshim, they need to be brought in. They have to be brought in on the northern side to do the avodah on the northern side. So they entered from Shar HaKorban. The next one, more to the east, is Shar HaNashim. Was the woman's gate, depending on what you believe women did with regards to their Karban. If women did smicha, then it was the gateway they entered to do smicha on their korbanot. If women don't do smicha, then it was the gateway that they could see and watch their korban. They could be a part of their korban from that gate. The last one is Shar HaShir, is the gateway of the song, whether that was because they kept the instruments over there or the Levim entered from there. The last one is Shar HaShir. Why was it called the gateway of Yoyachin? Shebo yatzai Yechaniah begaluto. That's when he went out, when he went into Galut. Shibi Mizrach, on the eastern side, which is the main entrance to the Azara, is Shar Nikanor. Shar Nikanor, which we'll discuss when we get to the Mishnayot in Yoma, discusses why it's called Shar Nikanor, what was unique about Shar Nikanor. So that's on the eastern side. Ushnei Pishpishim Ayulo. It had two smaller entranceways. Echad mi imino, vechad mi smolo. One on the right, one on the left. Ushnaim b'ma'arav. On the western side of the Azara, there were additional two more gates, but lo yalehem shem. They had no names. They had no names because they were not used frequently. The western side, first one, is behind the Kodesh HaKodeshim and is pushed up against the wall of Har HaBayit as well. There's not a lot of distance between it and the wall of Har HaBayit because the Mikdash on the plateau of Har HaBayit is skewed towards the north and the west. So because it's skewed northwest, therefore that western side is much closer to the wall. In addition to that, the main entrance to the Mikdash is on the eastern side because you want to face the Kodesh Kodeshim, but Ir David, which was where the people lived, is in the southeast, vis-a-vis Har HaBayit. The upper city, which in Bayit Sheni existed, which is what we call the Rova Yehudi today, that already is on the southern side. It's on the southwestern side, but they had the bridges that came across and brought you onto Har HaBayit. Once you went to Har HaBayit, you probably entered either from the southern side or from the eastern side. So the likelihood of people going in and out on the western side was very low, both because the traffic flow didn't make so much sense, as well as you're behind the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So they weren't frequently used, therefore there were gates there, but did not have names. Now the Gemara says, Matznitin, our Mishnah must be Abi Yosef ben Chanin. Abi Yosef ben Chanin, a second, third generation Tano, who would have lived roughly around the same time as Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov. He is the author of this Mishnah, the Amar, because we have a Mishnah that says, Keneged Yud Gimel Sharim, Keneged the 13 gates to the Azara. Who holds there are 13 gates in the Azara? That is, Abba Yosef ben Chanin, Biram, Kirabonon. According to the Rabbonon, Shiva Sharim Hayub Azara. There were only 7 gateways in the Azara. Now, at that home, the Rabbanan, based on the position of the Rabbanan, Heichanayu Hishtachavayot Halalu. Where were these bowing downs? They don't have 13 gates. So it's certainly not connected to She'arim. It must be connected to something else.
Doesn't mean that there were these.
When you pass the gate, you bow down.
Everybody.
You didn't have to pass all the gates. As soon as you were opposite a gate, you would bow down. So if you were crossing for whatever reason, you passed by the gates, you'd bow down as you passed the gates. The Tanin and Taman, we have a Mishnah over there. Yud Gimel Piratzot Ayubo Shipartzum Malchei Yavan. So in Yonah Diomas was Shkodesh Kislev today. There were 13 breaches in it that the kings of Yavan put into the wall. Now the wall here is the Soreg. The Soreg is an outer wall. It's not the wall of the Azara. It's an additional wall that was around the Azara and the whole Mikdash. And that was the limit by which non-Jews could go on Har HaBayit. They weren't allowed past the Soreg. Past the Soreg, only Jews were allowed. So the Malchei Yavan, to show that they could go past there, breached the Soreg. But in addition to that, brought Avodah Zarah into the Mikdash until they are thrown out by the Chashmonaim. So v'chazru v'gedrum, b'nei Chashmonaim is probably a later addition, but it's obvious from the context that that's who did this. Chazru v'gedrum, they came back and they fixed the, sealed the breaches. V'chazru k'negdam yudgimel hishtach avayot. Therefore, they had 13 different bowings connected those breaches as a todah l'Hashem for giving them back the Mikdash and being able to fix the breaches that the Malchei Yavan had made in the Soreg. So these are the difference of opinions. Now, who are the Rabbanon here? The Rabbanon here are Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, again, is the Stam author of the Mishnayot in Midot. And in Midot, you have a Stam Mishnah that says there were 7 She'arim. There are only 7 gates into the Azara. He doesn't have the 2 on the Marav. He only has 1 on the east. And then he drops 1 on each side. So he ends up with only 7 She'arim into the Mikdash versus the 13 that are enumerated here in our Mishnah. Alright, so first of all, you have eyewitness accounts. So here, Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov is the Stam author of the Mishnayot in Midot. And Midot, the Stam Mishnah, says that there are 7 gates to the Azara. Later on, we have a Mishnah that says that Abba Yosef ben Chanin says that there are actually 13 gates into the Azara. And beyond that, we have the Mishnah says there, it's connected to 13 Ishtachavayot. The Stam Mishnah over there says that no, it's not connected to 13 Ishtachavayot for the gateways, but rather for the breaches of the Soreg. Now, there's a question of, wait a minute, aren't these eyewitness accounts? Now, whether they have a different way of counting gates, or part of it might relate to the renovations of the Mikdash that Herod undertakes. Herod changes the Mikdash and rebuilds the Mikdash. Question of the eyewitness accounts as to when they saw the Bayit Sheni might relate to why there are more gates or less gates, might actually relate to those renovations or the time period where they're looking at them. Abba Yossi ben Chanin and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov are not so far off, so that makes it a little bit questionable. But it's possible that they saw different stages of those renovations, and it's possible that they might have had different eyewitness accounts about it. The Tosefta brings down Rabbi Yehuda, who actually has this compromised position. What she says is that they bow down when they got to the gates. You bow down, pishut yadayim raglayim, means you prostrate yourself in front of the gates. But when you pass the breaches in the soreg, socheh, you bowed yourself. You did a little bow. So he brings in the Tosefta this kind of a copyright opinion, which is that they bowed in both places, just a different type of bowing, but paid respects in both locations. That's found in the Tosefta. All right, now, in terms of moving on from here, the Mishnah mentions in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov that why is it called Shar HaMayim is because of what's going to happen in that gateway in the future. That's based on Psukim in Zechariah, as well as Psukim in Yechezkel, that describe in the future there's going to be a water channel that comes out from the Kodesh HaKodeshim. And that water channel will increase in intensity, size, as it moves out, and will flow to the main seas that are around Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara is going to go through pasuk by pasuk, of what we find in Zechariah, and then in Yechezkel, to describe this, obviously playing off what we see in the Mishnah from Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So the Gemara begins, Ktiv, it says, and now they're going to quote a pasuk from Zechariah, which is, Vaya bayomahu. Zechariah is describing the end of days, bayomahu. There's going to be a live spring that comes out of Yerushalayim. Half of them will go to the eastern Yam. And the other half will go to the Yam Acharon. Acharon, or Achora in the Tanakh, means to the western side. Right? Kedem is east, because that's where the sun comes from. Achor is west, because that's where the sun sets. So Yam Acharon would be the western ocean sea. And the Yamakadmoni would be the eastern one. Bakayitz ubachorefiyeh. It'll be there in all seasons, summer, winter. There'll be this live spring that comes out. The next pasuk you'll be familiar with in Zechariah, which is Vaya Hashem the Melech al kol aretz v'yomahu Hashem echad v'shmo echad. Just to give you the context of where this is found in Zechariah. So now the Gemara in darshaning this pasuk says Tani mibeit kodesh hakodeshim ad haparochet kekarnei silai v'chidai. That from the Kodesh HaKodeshim, where the source of this water, this spring is, until the Parochet, it flows like a thin stream, like the antenna of a snail. Kilai and Silai are Greek words, synonymous, that both mean a snail, or from the snail family. And they're talking about the antenna of the snail, which is very thin. Mina Parochet ad Mizbeach HaZahav, from the Parochet until the Mizbeach HaZahav, Kegane'i Chagavim, like the antenna of grasshoppers, locust. So it's expanded a little bit, slightly more substantial, thicker. Now here the Girsa, the Grot changes, flips the Girsa over here, but he says, Mi Mizbeach HaZahav leMiftan HaBayit, from the Mizbeach HaZahav until the Miftan HaBayit, to the threshold of the house, then it's Kechut Shel Sheti. It's like the string of the Sheti. Sheti is the warp in the loom. That is thicker, obviously, than the antenna of the grasshoppers, but still pretty narrow. And then from Mi Miftan HaBayit LaAzarot, from the Miftan HaBayit until the Azara, is Kechut Shel Erev. Kechut Shel Erev is the woof. The string of the woof. The woof strings are thicker than the warp string, so it's slightly thicker. Mikan Ve'elech, from there onward, kemape hefech. Then from there on, it's like spilling out of a small pach. A pach we discussed before with the pach shemen that they anointed Shaul with. It's a small pitcher of sorts that you pour out. It's like the flow out of a small pitcher. You might think of a watering can that you're pouring out the water from. That's the type of flow you have when it leaves the azara. And now we flip over to the Sukkim in Yechezkel. We'll give a description of this continuing flow of this water, which is Vayishiveni Petach HaBayit, Hashem brings the Chazkel towards the entrance of the Bayit, V'nei Mayim Yotzi Mitachan Miftan HaBayit, coming out from under the threshold of the house, Kadima, to the east, Ki Pinei HaBayit Kadim, because the Mikdash faces east, I mean the front of the Mikdash is to the east. V'mayim Yotzi Mitachat Miketef HaBayit HaYemanit, you go down the right side, Minegev LaMizbeach, to the south of the Mizbeach. In general, in Tanakh, Yamin is south. Small is north, Yamin is south. That's because if you're facing eastward, which is Kedem, then your right is going to be south and your left is going to be north. That's why Yemen is known or called Yemen, because it's in the Yamin, it's in the south. So here, Yaminit means it's going to go to the southern side, exit out to the southern side. We just saw that in our Mishnah, because that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said. That southern gate that was called Shar HaMayim is the one that in the future the water will go out. That's the pasuk in Yechezkel. Then it says, "Vayotzieni derech shar tzafona, sibeni derech chutz al shar chutz, derech hapone kadim, v'nei mayim mifakim min hakatef hayimanit." That water that is flowing out, mifakim, comes from the word pach, that are coming out from hakatef hayimanit, from the southern side. Then, betzeit ha'ish kadim, so then when he went out on the eastern side, v'kav biyado, he has a measuring stick in his hand. Vayamod elef be'ama. He measures out 1,000 amot. Vayirini b'mayim me'af sa'im. And the waters reach up to me'af sa'im. And that's what the Gemara is going to discuss here. What is this me'af sa'im? Ad karsule. That means up to his ankles. So Yechezkel says the water reaches his ankles when it's 1,000 amot outside of the bayit. Then he continues. The subsequent pasuk is vayamad elef. Measures another 1,000 amot. Vayirini b'mayim Mayim birkayim. It reaches until my knees. Ad birkei. Until his knees. Yechezkel says the water is now up to my knees in depth. Then, the continuation of that pasuk is Vayamad elef, another 1,000 amot. Vavireini me motnayim. The water reaches up to me motnayim, is ad matnaya, until his loins, till his hips. So you see what's happening. He started out with this very thin stream from the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the source of the spring, and it's expanding. It's getting larger, rather than the other way around. Normally you would think the water flows from the source. It's diminishing. Here it's the opposite way around. It's increasing in size, intensity, and in flow. Mikan ve'elech, from there onward, is the subsequent pasuk, which is ve'yamad elef, then he measured another 1,000 amot, nachal asher lo yuchal la'avor. It's a river that I cannot cross. So that's how strong or heavy the water is now that I can't cross it. Afilu lebirainin gidola ina yachol la'avor bo. Even in a large military ship, a large ocean-going vessel, you cannot cross the river because of the intensity. My time, why can't you cross it? Now the Gemara jumps to a pasuk, not from Yechezkel, but rather from Yishayahu. Because there Yishayahu describes, he says, Ki im sham adir Hashem lanu, mikom niharim yorim rachavei yadayim. It's talking about where Hashem is, there are these rivers and these waterways. Bal telechbo. Ani shayit vitsi adir lo yavrenu. Even if you're swimming or floating, you can't go through them. Tsi adir lo yavrenu. They are extremely strong. You cannot cross them. Strength of the water, or the intensity of the water, doesn't allow one to traverse the water over there. So now, mipnei ma, why is it that you can't cross it? So now they bring the remainder of the pasuk from Yechezkel, which is, ki gau amayim, the water has strengthened, mei sachu, nachal asher lo yaver. They became mei sachu. Now that's what the Gemara is going to ask, what mei sachu is. Water, or a river that cannot be crossed. So now the Gemara says, mahe mei sachu. What is mei sachu? Schia means to swim. Then he says, milishot. So they track the word and say, meisachu is milsachu. The inability to swim. Or milishot means to float. In the Gemara, lishut means to either to float or to use a raft of some sort to float in the water. So they're saying that these words are synonymous. Meischia and lishut is to swim and to float. The words are synonymous. And they're viewing the word meisachu as being waters that are milisachu or milishot, that are impossible to float in or to swim in. Amar Rabbi Chona, the fourth generation of Mordechai to Israel, Batrin karu l'shaita tzachona. In my city, they called shaita tzachona, meaning that the words are synonymous, to float and to swim. They call them the same thing. They're interchanged. The Gemara continues here, quoting a pasuk from Yishayahu. In this pasuk in Yishayahu, it talks about what's going to happen to Moab. That Moab is going to be flailing. They're going to be looking for help. And it describes that. Uperes yadav bikirbo. He'll stretch out his hands. Kasher yifares hasocheh lischot. Like a swimmer stretches out their arms. Now, I don't know if here it's a swimmer in the sense of a controlled swimmer or someone who's in the water who's trying to flailing in the water. So I don't know which one is the right explanation here. Vishpil gavato im arbot yadav. And haughtiness will be submerged with the arbot yadav, with his hands that are flying out. So now the Gemara says over here, mao lischot. What does it mean lischot? So amar Rabbi Yossi biribi bone. So fifth generation Amora from Eretz Yisrael, we bumped into a lot here. Mayan, which means mayim, water. Demit malalin, mitmal or lemalel means to speak in Aramaic. So mit malalim, that speak ba'alma to the world. So either it means that the waters themselves will be so significant or so unusual that they will speak to everybody. But speak to me means that everybody will speak about them because they are so unusual or so unique. So that's what it means here, that these waters are lischot, the meisachu, from the word sicha, to speak. So meisachu, you have two interpretations. One interpretation was from the word schia, to swim, and that will be impossible to traverse, even to swim or to float across. The one is meisicha, that they are waters that much is going to be said about because of their uniqueness or their specialness. The two are not necessarily mutually exclusive, it might be both. That's the interpretations we have of the Amorim. Tiv, in Zechariah, now we jump back to Zechariah, says, Bayomahu, Yeh Makor Niftach the Beit David, Ulo Yoshve Yerushalayim Lechatat Ulnida. So Makor is the equivalent of a Mayan. Makor is a source of water, a Mayan. So there'd be a Mayan that comes out, Niftach, this is the one they're talking about, comes out of the Bayit. And it's flowing to the south, the southeast. Well, the southeast is Ir David. So it's going to pass by Beit David, the house, the king's house. But today, if you go to Ir David, they speculate as to what was the king's house over there. And Uli Yoshve Yerushalayim, and the remainder of the people of Yerushalayim are down further up. He's in the northwesternmost point of Ir David. And then from there, it goes downhill towards the Gichon. That's the remainder of Yoshve Yerushalayim, the Chatat Ulanida. Chatat is Mechatat, is the mayim that you need for Paraduma. And Nida. Mechatat for that you need mayim chayim. You need live spring water. And nida, depending on how you interpret nida here, nida could be a zava, or it can mean mei mikveh. She requires mei mikveh, but also she can utilize mayim chayim. So now that's what the Gemara says. Based on that, Rabbi Shmuel Berab Nachman, Shmuel Berab Nachman, second, third generation Amor in Eretz Yisrael, B'shem Rabbi Yonatan, a first generation Amor in Eretz Yisrael, Mibeit David Ad Yoshve Yerushalayim, from the king's palace until the remainder of the residents of Yerushalayim, Sherim l'nida u'lechatat. The waters will be kosher for nida and chatat because they will be mayim chayim. They are a live spring. Bikan me'elech me'tarovetim. After that, they join with other water bodies, and therefore they are mixed water. Sherim l'nida, they're good for the nida, but the psulim me'chatat. The psulim me'chatat, they don't qualify as mayim chayim anymore. So me'chatat, it won't work for, but nida, it still works for it because it could be me' mikveh. Amar Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Lazar is Rabbi Lazar ben Pedat, who is the second generation of Moor in Eretz Yisrael. Mibeit David, Vad Yoshe Yerushalayim. He says from the palace until the remaining residents of Yerushalayim, Shirim Linidah L'chatat. It's good for both of them because they're Mayim Chaim. Mikan Ve'elech, from there onwards, they are Mei Kitaf Risotim. Mei Kitaf Risotim means that they are in a decline. Their movement is problematic because they are no longer Mayim Chaim. They're not being driven by the spring so that they're live water, but rather by the decline or the grade of the hill. And so because of that, they're now psulim linida ulechatat. They're psulim lechatat because they're no longer classified as mayim chayim. They're also psulim for nida for the same reason. They're not mayim chayim. They're also not mei mikveh. Mei mikveh has to be still. Mei mikveh can't be flowing. So a nida, she can go into a mikveh, which is still water, or she can go into mayim chayim. But she can't go into waters that are not mayim chayim that are moving. Because then it's not a mikveh and it's not mayim chayim. So therefore, according to Rabbi Lazar and Pedat, they don't qualify for either. All right, Ketiv. Then we move back to the Psukim in Yechezkel. We skipped one pasuk. We have the drasha. We've gone through all the Psukim so far. Then it says the pasuk we're skipping is Bishuveni, Neel Sfat, Hanachal, Eitz Rav, Ma'od, Mizeh, Mizeh. Brought me along the banks of the river. There are large trees along the banks of the river. Then, Vayomer Elai Amayim Ha'ele, Yotzim Elaglila HaKadmona. It's going out to the eastern Galil. It also go down to the plains, uva yama, and go to the ocean, the seas, el yama hamutzaim, v'nirpu amayim, to the yam hamutzaim, that is found. We'll figure out what that is in a second, v'nirpu amayim, and then the waters will weaken. So now the Gemara directions each part of the pasuk, which is, el aglila hakadmona, to the eastern Galil, ze yam shel samchu. Yam shel samchu, people identify as the Yam Chula, in the Chula Valley, Sea of Chula. One of them goes up to the north, to the Chula Sea, which, again, once they drain the Chula Valley, it's not a sea anymore. Now they've begun to reflood it, so you do see the water bodies there again. V'yardu el Arava, goes down to the Arava, the plains, Ze Yam Shel Tveria. That is the Kinneret. It fills the Kinneret. Uva Yama, goes to the Yam, Ze Yam HaMelach, goes down to the Dead Sea. El Hayama Mutzaim, Ze Hayama Gadol. That refers to the Mediterranean. So you have four tributaries that come off of this large water body that's coming out. Now, it started out very small, got to a large water body. It splits into four tributaries. One going to the Chula Valley, one going to the Kinneret, one going to Yam HaMelech, and one going to the Mediterranean. V'lama nekra shmo Mutzaim. Why is it called Mutzaim? Why is the Mediterranean called Mutzaim? Keneged shtei pamim shiyatza. Because the two times it left, or it went over its banks. Echad bidor Enosh, v'echad bidor HaPilaga. One at the time of Enosh. Enosh is third generation from Adam HaRishon. And Dor HaPilaga is Migdal Bavel. In both of those times, the Midrash tells us, at least by Dor Enosh, we know clearly the Midrash says that Hashem flooded the world. Prior to the Mabul, Hashem gave them a warning and flooded a large portion of the world at that time, by the time of Dor Enosh, in order to give them a warning that things weren't going so well and that they should desist from Avodah Zarah. Obviously the warning didn't work, and that's why we end up with the full Mabul later on. Here the Gemara says also that in Dor HaPilaga, there was also some sort of flooding that took place. Rabbi Elazar b'shem Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Elazar, we know, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, the second generation Amora, says the name of Rabbi Chanina Bar Chama, who was a first generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. Berishona yatsa ad Calabria. Calabria is somewhere in the south of Italy. So the first time they overflowed to that place in southern Italy. Ubishnia, the second time it happened, yatsa ad Kipe Barbaria. It went to the Barbary Coast, which is on the northwestern edge of Africa. So the Barbary Coast is where the waters went to. Now the question of where the waters are coming from, as opposed to where they're going. If you say it's the Mediterranean that's overflowing, then we're talking about from the east to the west, how much it overflowed or how much it expanded. If you're talking about the Okeanos, which is the way the Midrash describes it in Enosh, is that the Okeanos, the Atlantic, overflowed over to the Mediterranean. And so now the question of how far east it went is the question, not far how west. The first time it went until Calabria, until southern Italy. And the second time it went to the Barbary Coast. Now what's interesting over here is if you look in the Karban Eidah's description of this, he says, what are these places that we're describing over here? He says, Bedor Enosh etzad medina shishma Calabria v'hi b'dinat Sarfat. That's in France. So that's where he claims it went to. Ubedor HaPilaga yatzad aslaim shibidinat Barbaria. So it was up to the stones in Barbaria, whether he's talking about the Barbaria coast or he's talking about Great Britain at that time, which was also known by a similar name, the earlier time periods before it was heavily settled. So I don't know if the Karban Eidah is describing water moving from the Mediterranean up north, covering Europe. He's talking about the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, that's pushing to the east and covering up, whether it's going all the way to France or all the way to Great Britain. That's their description. It Rav Acha b'shem Rabbi Chanina. So instead you have Rav Acha, who is a fourth generation Amora, quoting Rabbi Chanina, again, who's a first generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael, but Yishona Yatsu at Kipei Barbara. He has it the other way around. The first time they went until the Barbary Coast, Mushnia Yatsad Akko v'ad Yafo. They went until Akko and Yafo. So here it definitely sounds like you're moving eastward, which was the first time it went to the Barbary Coast. The second time it went all the way to Akko and Yafo, which are port cities in Eretz Yisrael, which means that the Atlantic Ocean moved all the way to the east. It covered over, it flooded the Mediterranean that far to the east. So that would be more of a sense that we're moving eastward rather than westward, based on the description that we have here, the second description. So now we quote a Pasuk in Yov says, V'omar, ad po tavo, to here you'll come, v'lo tosif, then no more. Upo yashit b'ga'on galecha. And here you will lay out your waves, meaning that your waves will stop at this point. The Gemara says, what does that mean? Ad yafo ashit g'on galecha. Until yafo, your waves will be cast. So there was an end, meaning that was the end of the flooding, or where the flooding stopped. Now the Gemara explains, Necha, yama rabo, the Yama de Milcha. We're talking about the Yama Rabba, the Great Ocean. The Great Ocean is referring to the Mediterranean, the Yam HaGadol. The Yama de Milcha, the Dead Sea. Sea of Salt is the Dead Sea. Bishvil the Mitkan. I understand why you would have the waters, the tributaries that come out of this water from the Mikdash would go there, because they're salty water. And if you want to sweeten, quote unquote, get sweet water, you need fresh water to go in there. So the fresh water will improve the Dead Sea and the Mediterranean to the point where there'll be drinkable water. Yama de Tiberia, Yama de Samchu, what do you need that for? What do you need the water to go over there for? Because they're already sweet water bodies. They're fresh water bodies. So as the Rabot, Digatam, It's in order to increase the species of fish that are in there. Dichtivbe, because it says about it, and here again we're going to quote a pasuk from Yechezkel, continuing the psukim that we have here. We skip pasuk tat, which says, "Vaya kol nefesh chaya asher yisrotz el kol asher yavo sham nachalayim yichyeh." But yeah, dagar rabba mod, tons of fish. Ki bau shama amayim ha'ele v'yiraf'u. V'chai kol asher yavo shama anacha. And it'll bring life. Wherever this river goes, it'll bring life. The next pasuk says, "Vaya amdu alav dvagim." Dvagim here mean fishermen will stand on it. Ein gedi vad ein eglayim. Men gedi, which we're familiar with, until ein eglayim up in the north. Mishtoach lecharamim. They will cast their nets. Lemina, and there'll be all these fish. Tied gadam kidgata yamagadol rabamod. And the species of fish that will be captured by their nets will be so varied as those that are found in the Mediterranean Sea. So the purpose of the water is going to the Yam de Sanfu and the Yam de Kinneret, not just to fill them and to have a constant supply of water, but to provide a life source, which will be larger numbers of species of fish will then exist in those areas. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who is the Nasi and a fourth generation Tana, went to Tzaidan, which is a yeshuv which is on the coast of the Kinneret. I was a time that I went to Tzaidan, they brought out to me in a serving dish more than 300 types of fish. So he's describing this idea that the number of fish that come out of the Kinneret, and then Al-Khat Kam Lakam in the future, how many more species of fish there will be. So then the waters will subside or calm down. And the pasuk says afterwards, Bitzotav ugva'av v'lo yirafu l'melach nitanu. Tiv. V'nirpu'u amayim. It says that the waters will weaken or be reduced. V'atamart. And you said, v'lo yirafu, that they will not weaken. Earlier on we said that the pasuk says in pasuk chet, it says, v'nirpu amayim, the waters will weaken. In the pasuk that we just quoted from Yirav, it says, bitzotav gva'av, lo yirafu, la melech nitanu. They will not weaken. Which way is it? Is it nirpu amayim or lo yirpu amayim? So the Gemara says, makom hu, ushmo lo yirafu. Lo yirafu is, don't take it literally, it's not the verb, it will not weaken, but rather there's a place called lo yirafu. So the waters will weaken, or they will be reduced, and they will go to a place called lo yirafu. So Lirafu is not a description of the waters, but rather a description of a location. An alternative reading over here is, v'nirpu'u amayim, the waters will be diluted. Diluted means that they will no longer be salty. So if that's the case, melach minayin. Where are we going to get salt from? If all the salt of Yam HaMelach and of the Mediterranean is wiped out, where are you going to get salt from? If the waters now weaken the saltiness of the water, they're going to make it into sweet waters. So the answer is, Bitziotav ugvav v'lo yirafu, l'melach nitanu. They will not be weakened on these places because l'melach nitanu, they're given for salt. So not all the waters will be sweetened, but rather they will remain salty. That is, Yam HaMelach will remain with its salt because that's the purpose of it, is to provide salt. Well, it says, v'nirpu'u amayim. Pasuket says that the waters will be diluted. V'at amaret v'lo yirafu amayim. And now you're telling me the Pasuk Yid-Alef says that they will not be diluted and that they will not weaken because they're made for salt. So how do you reconcile those? Lo yirafu is a location and not necessarily a description of what's going to happen to the waters, but rather, v'lo yirafu, the waters will be diluted, and lo yirafu is a place where you'll get the salt from. That'll be the source of salt because the waters will no longer be salty, and you will not be able to dehydrate the waters of this ocean or of Yam HaMelach to get the salt. Therefore, you have to go to a place called Lo Yirafu to get your salt. Tiv, next pasuk in Yechezkel, the last pasuk in this series, which is, V'lanachal yale al sfato mizeh mizeh kol etz machal. On each side of the banks of this river will grow all sorts of fruit, bearing trees. Lo yibol aleihu. Their leaves will never wither. V'lo yitom piryo. And their fruit will never desist. L'chodoshav yivaker. In its months, it will produce. Kimeimav min ha-migdash hema yotzim. Because its waters come from the source from the migdash. Vayu piryo l'machal. Its fruit will be for eating. V'aleu l'trufa. And its leaves as medicinal. So now the Gemara is going to go through this. What exactly is this that it gives its fruit? L'chodashav yivaker. Tane, Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Tam Rabbi Yehuda is Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, for a generation Tano. Lefi shebalam hazeh tua osa l'shisha chodoshim. You can plant grain every 6 months. That's why you have winter wheat and summer wheat. Grains can be produced every 6 months. Bilan osel l'shnei masar chodesh. Trees produce once a year. Aval, the atid level, in the future, hatva osed chodesh echad, bialan osed shnei chodeshim. The produce, the grains will produce every month, and the trees will produce every 2 months. So the ratio is the same, the trees are double, takes twice as long for them to go through their cycle as the grains. Just now it's 6 months versus a year, then it'll be 1 month versus 2 months. My time up. How does he know that? Because it says, lechodoshav yivaker. Chodoshav yivaker. Chodoshav is plural, is 2 months. Bikur is like bikurim, is the first fruits. New fruits will emerge, or new produce will emerge every 2 months. Chodoshav yivaker. Chodoshav is plural. So I'm Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi bar Chalapta, the Stam Rabbi Yossi, who is also a Tana in the fourth generation, says, Lefi shibu olam azeat fu'a ose l'shisha chodoshim. Len ose l'yubet chodesh. Then in our world, grains produce every 6 months, whereas fruit trees produce every 12 months. Aval atid avol. Tva ose l'tet vavyom. The tva will do it every 15 days. V'ilan ose l'chodesh echad. And the trees, the fruit trees, will produce for one chodesh. Kein matzino. Because we find that Shasat Tuvah Mimei Yoel, in the time of Yoel, when they had the major locust infestation, invasion, ate up everything that was there. So then, from Rosh Chodesh Nisan until the Pesach, the Chamisha Asar Yom, V'karei Mimenu HaOmer, that they brought from that growth that started on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they brought the new Omer. That means within 15 days, you got the grains to full maturity. So at the time of Yoel, they reach full maturity in 15 days, and we know that the ratio or the relationship between trees to tvoa is double. That means that the tvoa will produce in 15 days, and the trees will produce in a month. Versus the other one, which was chodoshav yivaker. Chodoshav is plural, is 2 months. Yivaker, they will have fruit. So if you have fruit, trees produce every 2 months, then on the ratio of 2 to 1, then the tvoa, the produce, will produce every 1 month. My taima, what's the reason behind this? Now we quote the pasuk from Yoel, which is Ubnei Tzion, Gilu v'simchu b'Hashem Elokeichem. People of Tzion, rejoice, be happy with Hashem. Ki natan lachem et amore litztaka, v'yorei lachem ageshem more umakosh barishon. That Hashem is going to give you the more, we say every day in Vayayim Shemoa, which is the yorei umakosh. Those are the different rains, the heavy rains, the light rains that come. That Hashem is going to give you geshem more umakosh. Yorei umakosh, when do those rains usually come? They come starting in Cheshvan, and they move through the winter season. But this time it's barishon, in the first. What's the first month of the year? Nisan. So the rain came in Nisan. And despite the fact that the rain came in Nisan, and that's when the tevuah started to grow, they were able to bring from that the Omer. The Omer is brought on the 16th of Nisan. That means between Rosh Chodesh Nisan and the 16th of Nisan, you had the produce, the grains, grow to full maturity. Umami kayem Rabbi Yossi the chodoshav yivaker. Rabbi Yossi, who said that it's going to happen every month, what is he going to do with the chodoshav yivaker? Every 2 months it'll reproduce. V'chodesh, v'chodesh, yeh mevaker. Chodeshav doesn't mean every 2 months. It means monthly it will produce. And therefore it's every month. V'aleo l'trufa. Aleo l'trufa says its leaves will be medicinal in nature. What is the nature of this medicine? Rabbi Yochanan Amar, tarpe mitzitz alea v'taref mezona. Tarpe, from the word ripui, it'll be medicinal. Suck on its leaves and it will give it full nutrition or full sustenance, meaning that the leaves will have the same properties as the fruits themselves. So you can suck on the leaves and you will get the same effect as of eating the fruits. An alternative reading is that that if you suck on the leaf, it will help digest your food and it'll be medicinal in that way. Rav Ushmuel, Kadamar, Latir Pe Shalamalon. It's to open up the mouth above. That means that people that were mute before, who could not speak, who began to the gift of speech through eating these leaves. That's the true father will come. Kadamar, Latir Pe Shalamalon. And some say it's the womb down below, which is those that aren't able to reproduce, that are barren, will then begin to the ability to have children based on this. That's what the play on the word of Tarpe, or Pe, the Trufa. And the trufa here, they're saying is medicinal, but trufa, they're playing on peh. What is the peh that you're healing? Is it the peh lamala? Is it the mouth to be able to speech? Or peh lamata, which is the womb? And then the first interpretation was that it would be a tarpeh, mitzitzaleh, but taraf mizonah. So you played on the word taraf. And tarpeh, which is that you'll suck on the leaves and you'll get the full feeling of the fruit. Rabbi Chanina, Ve'yirbi Yoshua ben Levi. Two first-generation Amoraim from Eretz Yisrael. Chanamar latir pe'akarot, v'chanamar latir pe'ilmim. So they have the same machloket over here, but pe'lelamalo, pe'lelamalo, and they're just giving that the definition to what that means. That means the mouth of those that are unable to speak versus those that are unable to have children. So Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Shmuel ben Levi, Rabbi Shmuel, first generation Amoraim in Bavel, and Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Shmuel ben Levi, first generation Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael, have a similar argument about exactly what the trufa is over here. Ulumatan bitzafon. So now we go back to the description of the Mishnah that says on the northern side, they had these gates. At motze b'shashala Nebuchadnezzar lekan, ba yeshev lo b'difnei shel Antochia. Difnei is the name of a place. Shel Antochia is the capital city that was up in northern Syria, especially in the time of the Greeks. That was a large center of the rule over this area. And that's where the name Antiochus also comes from. Yatsa Sanhedrin gedola likrato. And the Sanhedrin went out to greet him. Vamralo, higia zman habayit hazeh leicharef. Has the time come for this house to be destroyed? So Amar lahem, he says to them, Oto shimlachti alechem, tnu li v'ani holech. The one that I appointed as king over you, if you give him to me, I'll leave here. They go tell Yoyachin was the king that Nebuchadnezzar had installed. He had already put Yoyakim, his father, into Galut. And now he comes back and he installed Yoyachin and now he comes back. And he tells him, listen, if you give me Yoyachin, I'm going to leave the bayit intact. I won't do any damage here. I won't conquer Yerushalayim. Just give me the king. They said, Yoyachin, Nebuchadnezzar bailocha. Nebuchadnezzar wants you. He wants to speak to you. So then he says, Kevin Shema Mehen, Kach. So when he heard this, Natal Maftechot Shel Beit HaMikdash, he took the keys of the Beit HaMikdash, Alala Gagot Shel Eichal, went on to the roof of the Eichal, Amar Lefanav, Ribono Shel Olam, Lisha Avar Ainu Ne'manim Lecha. We were trustworthy to you. We were honorable and dedicated, faithful to you. And therefore we had the keys to the Mikdash. We're no longer reliable. We're no longer faithful to Hashem. Dedicated to you, trustworthy. Here are your keys back. Train Amoraim. It's a machloket here, Amoraim. What happened? Chanamar Zakan. Va'od lo yardu. One of them says he threw the keys up and it just didn't come down. V'chanamar Ba'akiminyad natatan miyado. A shape of a hand came out of the sky and took him out of his hands. Kevin Shiru kol chorei. Chorei here probably means, is from the word like bachurei. The other option of chorei means sarei, the princes or the leaders of Klal Yisrael. So the young one, bachurei Yehuda, Cain, once they saw this, alu, the rosh, gagotehem, naflu v'metu. They went up and to the roofs and they jumped off, they committed suicide.
This is a similar story that's brought in the Bavli, in the Gemara in Ta'anit, that describes to the Pirchei Kuhuna, right before the Korban HaBayit. It describes the same idea that they climbed up onto the roofs of the Eichal and they tossed the keys up, and a similar type of story as to what is written here.
Hadawuk dichtiv, that is what is meant by the pasuk that we find in Shayel, which is Masa Gei Chizayon, Malach Efo Kalita Kulach Legagot, Chuot Mlea Ir Homia, Kirya Aliza, Chalalayich Lo Chalalecherev, Lo Meitei Milchama. So the description over here is Masa Gei Chizayon. There's some sort of vision. Kelita kulcha legagot, and everybody's up on the roofs. So why is there a vision? Everybody's up on the roofs. Why is everybody up on the roofs? Because of the story that took place here with the keys. Now, Shuot Malaya Irhomiya, the city is full of ruckus, full of noise. Kira Aliza Hal Khalalayech Lo Khalalecherev. The city of beauty and calmness is now in turmoil. And why is that? Lo Khalalecherev. People are not killed by the sword, Velo Meitei Milchama, not by the battle. Why are they dying? So right here, it's except from the drusha that they were committing suicide because they realized the end was here now, because the keys to the Beit HaMikdash are returned, and therefore the Beit HaMikdash is not going to last very much longer. Yechoniah, Yoyachin is put into Galut. His uncle, Tzidkiyahu, was then made the king. And then the next trip up, when Nebuchadnezzar comes to Tzidkiyahu into Galut, he destroys the Mikdash. On that trip up, Nebuchadnezzar destroys the Mikdash and puts Tzidkiyahu into Galut, which we learned about earlier in the Dapim. Right now, move on to the next Mishnah. Next Mishnah describes the next 13 that are found inside of the Mishnah before, which is Yugamo Shulchanot Ayu B'Mikdash. There were 13 tables in the Mikdash. Chet shel shayish, eight of them were marble tables with beit mitbechayim in the area where they shechted the animals. Shaleim adichim et akirbayim, on them they washed down the innards of the animals. So to the north of the Mizbeach, they had the tabaot, the rings, which they used to shech the animals. And then they had these pillars with hooks on them. They used to flay the animals. Next to those pillars with the hooks on them, they had these tables of shayish, on which they put the innards of the animal to wash them down before they put them onto the Mizbeach. Now, why are they made out of marble? Because marble stays cool. So when they put the innards on it, it wouldn't cause them to rot quickly because it would keep them cool. Ubet b'marav ha-kevesh, two of them were on the western side of the ramp. The ramp to the Mizbeach is on the southern side of the Mizbeach. And then to the west of it, which is towards the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim, on that western side of the ramp, there were two tables. Echad shel shayish v'echad shel kesef. One made out of marble, one made out of silver. Al shel shayish notim et ha'evarim. On the marble one, they put the limbs that they're going to take up to the Mizbeach afterwards. So in order to keep them cool, they leave them on the shayish. When they had to put them there, when they went in, for instance, to go say Kriyat Shema, before they finished up the Tamid shel Shachar, they used to leave them on the table. Al shel kesef, the silver table was used, kli sharet. In the morning, when they took out the kli sharet, the 93 kli sharet that they needed for the day's work in the Mikdash, they used to place them on the silver table. Ubet be'ulam, mi bifnim. There are two in the ulam, inside the ulam, which is the entranceway or the chamber that comes before the Kodesh and Kodesh HaKodeshim. You recognize it by the pictures of the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the wider front to it. That wider front is the ulam. This is at the entranceway into the heichal. So al petach habayit, they're inside of that by the doorway. Echad shel shayish ve'echad shel zahav. One of marble and one of gold. Shel shayish notim lechem apanim b'knisato. When they're bringing the lechem apanim in, they used to put that on the marble one, keep it cool, because they had to last in a week on the lechem apanim, on the shulchan. Al shel zahav b'tziyato. On the way out, they put it on the gold table. First of all, they're going to eat it right then. The Kohanim are going to split it up and eat it. But also, Shemali Mikodesh V'lo Moridim. The bread's been sitting all week on the Shulchan inside. The Shulchan's made out of gold. So if you can take it off the gold in Shulchan, you want to place it in gold so it doesn't go down Mikodesh. Echad Shel Zahab Min Bifnim, Shalav Lachem Panim Tamid. And the 13th table is the one inside, which is the Shulchan. The Shulchan itself that's found in the Kodesh. So based on that, you have the Shulchan that has Lachem Panim on is one. You have the two Shulchanot by the Ulam, which are for the taking the breads in and out. That's three. Then you have two by the Kevesh HaMizbeach, which is by the ramp of the Mizbeach for putting the Evarim and the Kli Sharet on. That gets you up to five. And then you have the eight, which are by the Shechita area, where they used to wash down the inside. That's 13. So those are the 13 Shulchanot. Tane, Al Shel Kesef. We have a Braita that says that we were put on silver tables. The Braita uses Kesef, silver, instead of Shayish. And now the Gemara rejects this Girsa of the Braita because it says, Rabbi Yosei, a fourth generation Amora, Amar B'Shem, Rabbi Shmuel, Bar Rabbi Yitzchak, a third generation Amora, and Rabbi Chanina of Tzipori, who is a fifth generation Amora, Mati Ben Shmed, Rabbi Yochanan, quotes in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, the second generation of Mor of Eretz Yisrael. Late Tan Shel Kesef. There is no Kesef here. There are no silver tables over here. Because it doesn't work. It's not functional. It heats up and it'll cause things to go bad. Lochein Tani. Don't we have a Mishnah that says, Zeachad min hanisim shenasu bebeit amigdash. B'shem shayu menichim oto chom. Kacha yumotzim oto chom. That when they put down the lechem apanim, it was hot. Fresh bread out of the oven. And when they came to pick it up, it was warm as well. Shenemar, it says, "Lasum lechem chom biyomi lakchom." This is in Shmuel Aleph when David HaMelech is running away from Shaul and he's looking for something to eat. One of the Kohanim goes and gives him some bread from the lechem panim. That's by Nov Yira Kohanim, where David gets the lechem from there. Later on, Shaul wipes out the city because of their help or assistance that they provided to David. It says, "Veitein lo akohen kodesh ki lo aya sham lechem kim lechem apanim musarim lifnei Hashem lasum lechem chom biyom hilakcho." That it was hot on the day that it's taken. So the way Darshan from that is that on the day they took the lechem apanim off, it was still as hot or as fresh as the day that they put it on. So that was a miracle that happened in the Mikdash, that it was always warm. Meshuvah Levi Amar, the first generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael, says, "Ein maskrim asen nisim." We don't mention nisim or the equivalent of "ein somchim al anes." It's true that that's what happened. It's true that the bread remained fresh. It's true, also the Mishnah Avot says, "Lo'isriach bara sara kodesh mebeit mitchayim," that meat never went bad in the Mikdash, despite all the meat and the heat and everything that was there, it never went bad. Nevertheless, you're not somchim al anes. Therefore, you put it on the tables. You do it in the natural way, which is you try to keep it on cooler tables, so it won't go bad. If the miracle happens, great. But we don't rely on the miracle. We do it in the natural way, and when the miracle happens, we're happy for the miracle. That's why they use shayish, and that's why they did not use metal. Now, the question here that was posed as to why was it made out of marble, the bright azed, it was made out of silver. You could read it as a question on the shulchanot that were for the lechem apanim, which seems to be based on the flow of the sugya. You also read it has to do with the shulchanot that were in the Beit Mitbakayim. And the Rosh suggests that it was actually talking about the shulchanot that they put the evarim that were going up to the mizbeach. So if you have opinions that say it's talking about all of these different tables that we mentioned in the Mishnah, they're made of shayish, the Braita has them as kesef. So different Rishonim have different approaches as to which one this Braita is referencing and what the proof is, and then what we reject. Truth is, it could be any of the tables, because the reasoning is the same behind all of them, which is the problem is that silver heats up, and marble cools down. Bon kamei Rabbi Ila. They asked the question before Rabbi Eli, who is the third generation of Moron Eretz Yisrael. Lo yasham lechem, ma'una l'nicho l'shabbat ha'ba'a. What happens if you have no lechem apanim to replace the lechem apanim that's on there each week? You put the lechem apanim on, then you bring the bazichei levona, you makriv them on Shabbat, and then the lechem apanim is taken off, and the new one is put on. What happens if they get to Shabbat, and there's no new lechem apanim? Amar lo, k'tiv. It says, v'natata al shulchan lechem panim lefanai tamid. There should be lechem in front of me always. Lechem panim afilu pasul. Even if it's pasul, even if it's not kosher lechem apanim, it stays on the shulchan. So even though by leaving on an additional week, it might be called pasul because now it's past its time. Nevertheless, it's worth leaving it there because it's still called lechem apanim. And even if it's pasul, there's a lechem panim tamid. So we leave it on the table despite the fact that it's not going to be edible afterwards. And basically the diok is, since it doesn't say lechem hapanim, but rather lechem panim, so it has a more generic sense to it that even if it's pasul, it can be left on the shulchan. Asara shulchanot asa Shlomo. Shlomo made 10 tables. Dichtiv, because it says in the pasuk in Divrei Yamim, v'su shulchanot asara v'enach v'echelal chamisha miyamin v'chamisha mismol. 5 on the right, 5 on the left. V'yas mizukrei zahav meyah. They made 100 pitchers out of gold that were used for the zrikat adam, for collecting of the dam. So now the Gemara wants to know about these 10 tables. This is a question that we also raised when we were learning Kodoshim in Menachot, which is, im teimar chamisha b'darom v'chamisha b'tzafon. I told you before, right and left means south and north. So now, if you tell me that yamin and small is south and north, halo ain't shulchan kasher l'b'tzafon. Shulchan is only kasher on the northern side. Inside of the Kodesh, the Shulchan's on the north side, the menorah is on the southern side, and the Mizbech HaZav is in the middle. So if he had 10 Shulchanot, 5 on the northern side and 5 on the southern side isn't useful here. Shneimar, because it says that the Shulchan diten atzel atzafon, that you have to put the Shulchan on the northern side of the Kodesh. Ma tam alomar chamisha miyamin chamisha mismol, el chamisha miyamin Shulchanot shel Moshe, to the right of the Shulchan of Moshe, which is the one that the Lechem HaPanim goes on it. Chamisha mismolo and 5 to the left, which would mean east and west. Then right of it would be to the east, left would be to the west. So it's all on the northern side, to the east and to the west. We did this in Menachot, the layout of the Shulchanot, exactly how the Shulchanot were laid out, how they fit them in, and how exactly these were laid out. Afo began lo yamisadel b'shal Moshe bilvad. Nevertheless, they only put bread on Moshe Rabbeinu's Shulchan, Shneimar. The Shulchan asher alav lechem apanim. There's only one Shulchan, and in the singular, it has the lechem apanim on it. That's the one. So the other ones are decorative. You have 5 to the right, 5 to the left that are decorative, but the Shulchan that the lechem apanim on is in the middle, and that's when they put the lechem apanim on. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, who's a fifth generation Amora, says, Al kulan haya misader. They put lechem apanim on all of them. Shenemar, vet ashulchanot v'alehem lechem ha'panim. So we have an alternative pasuk that says in the plural. So in Divrei Yamim it says V'yash Shlomo et kol hakelim asher beit ha'elukim v'et mizbach ha'zahav v'et ha'shulchanot v'aleihem lechem ha'panim. So here it's in plural. It says shulchanot and lechem ha'panim. So one pasuk in Malachim says V'yash Shlomo et kol hakelim asher beit ha'shem mizbach ha'zahav v'et ha'shulchan asher alav lechem ha'panim, in the singular zahav. They were all made out of gold. In Divrei Yamim it talks about shulchanot in plural and lechem ha'panim. So here you have a machloket Tanaim as to whether there was only lechem ha'panim put on the Shulchan of Moshe, on one Shulchan, or whether it was put on all the Shulchanot. They laid out Lechem HaPanim in all 11 of the Shulchanot that were there, and each one of them has a proof from one of the pasuk in Melachim and the other one from the pasuk in Divrei HaYamim. Okay, we'll stop over here.